of Lover. This is Pacific Waves from RNZ Pacific. I'm Susanna Swiswiki. Coming up.
So from our end as the election management body, we will then gazette all the results that have been announcing.
Over 60% of the Solomon Islands election national results are in. Also,
I think there's been a great deal of misinformation around what the bill is and isn't.
What's gotten Cook Islands industry members into a heap of worry? And a new initiative aims to boost Māori and Pasifika academic success. Over 60% of votes in the Solomon Islands election have been counted. So far, two women MPs have been elected and three former prime ministers may be in the running for the top job. Our editor Kuroi Hawkins reports.
It's been 5 days since Solomon Islanders went to the polls and counting is still progressing at a snail's pace. It's partly because it took so long to transport ballot boxes from remote communities to counting centres, but also because the country is conducting its first joint election of provincial and national representatives. The Chief Electoral Officer, Jasper Anisi, says over half of all national ballots have been counted.
From our end as the election management body, we will then gazette all the results that I've been announcing. And once that the gazette is done, then I will write to the clerk of the parliament so that he can now look at ways of calling the first meeting and working on the election of the prime minister. So that is the next step.
As of Monday morning, our party, the largest single grouping in the last coalition government, was in the lead, having won 32% of counted votes, followed closely by the independent MPs on 31%, and then the Development Party on just under 17%, with the United Party rounding out the top four on 6.1%. RNZ Pacific spoke with some voters who asked to remain anonymous about their expectations.
Me like him good government, I'm a good leader for you me now. Make him, me look him good too. Yeah. I'm a good government, but beginning about garden waka too, yeah.
But it's still early days as far as coalition negotiations within the context of Solomon Islands still developing party politics are concerned.
Me like for new prime minister for economy blow me, make him good. Because last government or prime minister, yeah, economy blow me, him no good.
In terms of potential leaders, there are several former prime ministers already among those returned to the House, including incumbent Manase Songovare, Rick Ho, and potentially Gordon Darcy Lilo, who was leading the count by a large margin in his electorate overnight. Meanwhile, incumbent MP Frida Soraya Komoa and independent candidate Choylin Douglas are the first two women candidates to officially make it through in this election, while another independent candidate, Kathy Nori, has been mentioned in provisional results.
Since this story was recorded, new provisional results have confirmed former Prime Minister Gordon Darcy Lilo has been elected to Parliament for the Central Honiara constituency. But another former Prime Minister, Dr. Derek Sikua, was unsuccessful in his campaign. There's growing concern over the Cook Islands cryptocurrency bill before Parliament, which allegedly could be used to hack into systems around the world. Drumcliff, a high-value debt collector specialising in international asset seizure, hired two Cook Islands-based lawyers to draft the tainted cryptocurrency recovery bill 2023. Tiana Haxton filed this report.
Industry members say the lack of consultation as this bill was drafted has sparked concerns. There are calls for the bill to not be progressed, as experts and industry members say the legislation has far-reaching and potentially international ramifications. The Cook Islands' own Crown Law says it was excluded from the drafting process. The bill was tabled in Parliament by the Minister of Justice, Vaine Makemokoroa, who says he too was kept out of the loop.
Before this bill was tabled in Parliament, I wasn't consulted at all until about 3 or 4 days before the tabling. By then, what am I going to understand? I didn't know anything about this bill at all.
The minister says several industry members and experts argue that the bill could be used to hack into systems around the world.
There are a lot of parts in the bill that are reason for concern and debate. Our local companies in the offshore banking sector are very worried. They say their industry will be affected by this proposed bill, and there are a lot of points being brought up that need to be looked at in more depth.
Trustees from several companies have submitted their concerns to the Select Committee. RNZ Pacific has seen these documents in which the trustees say this bill could harm the Cook Islands' international relationships and cause significant damage to the offshore trust industry. Pua'i Wichman, founder and CEO of Aura Trust Partners, says the risk list goes on and he hopes the bill is withdrawn.
There are constitutional issues, you know, whether Cook Islanders are safeguarded from being hacked under this bill and therefore losing access to their natural right to justice. The list just goes on. There is so much wrong with this bill. We don't see any benefits and there's a lot of risks.
Tim Arnold, who drafted the tainted cryptocurrency recovery bill, says he would not have gotten involved if he did not believe it would benefit the Cook Islands.
I think there's been a great deal of misinformation around what the bill is and isn't. I certainly believe that the bill does very much have a future as one of the tools to deal with this global problem. The Cook Islands stands to benefit in a number of ways.
Mr. Arnold says the bill will help the Cook Islands fight against transnational crime. He says for every $100 seized off victims globally, only $1 is returned and better processes will be made. He says cryptocurrencies are difficult to track and link to crime, and this bill supports those that can.
This bill is aimed at cryptocurrency and only cryptocurrency that has been used for serious crime. There is a private sector actor who has the resources and the technical capability in order to track and trace cryptocurrency and that it has been used.
Mr. Arnold explained that the Cook Islands would serve as an information highway in the global fight against transnational crime and the country would be able to provide a place for seized assets to be safely stored while it goes through legal processes. In response to the public outcry for this bill to be withdrawn, Prime Minister Mark Brown says he is confident that whatever law we end up with will be in keeping with the Constitution and laws and will be aligned with other international agencies and countries fighting cybercrime. A spokesperson says the government is aware of the numerous concerns raised and solutions have also been posed.
The University of Auckland have recently launched a new initiative to improve Māori and Pacific University entrance pass rates and increase success at tertiary level. Partnering with 12 secondary schools, the university hopes that the initiative will boost students' academic success. Māori and Pacific University entrance attainment dropped from 40% in 2020 to 34% in 2022, compared with the national UE attainment of 53% in 2020 and 50% in 2022. Joining me to talk about the initiative is the Associate Director of Schools and Community Engagement, Liletina Waka.
Yeah, so we've partnered with 12 Auckland schools and have agreed to achieve UE parity by the year 2030. So really what we're doing with our schools across Auckland is saying, how do we increase university entrance achievement rates for our Māori and Pacific students, and then tracking that across the next 6 years. We've seen across the schools about an 11 to just under 40% disparity when it comes to achievement rates, and I can talk a little bit more about what sits under UE success, but broadly that's what we're looking at achieving.
How long has this partnership been in the works for?
So depends how you look at it. But really what we've had is the introduction of our Taumata Teite strategy, so our Vision 2030 strategy as a university. And then in 2019, so 5 years ago, we had Whakamana Tangata, that was our student services strategy. And through those, particularly through Whakamana Tangata, we saw a big restructure in my office, the Schools and Community Engagement Office, was established 2 years ago. So it's been a 5-year journey in terms of getting the university kind of strategically where it needs to be in terms of capability and a shared one, shared vision in terms of our strategic priorities. And over the last 2 years, what we've seen is a significant amount of resource invested from the university to make sure we've got the right operating model, the right talent, the right teams to engage with schools. So operationally, we've been at this for 2 years and have just achieved the collective signing earlier last week.
Why is it important to boost the number of Māori and Pacific students at uni? Is it the only pathway that improves life chances for that particular population?
Secondary education sector. So if we think about our high schools, at high school, the university entrance is the highest qualification you can get at high school. It's not NCA level 3, which is what some of our learners and some of our families think. So there's an education piece there. And if we dig into UE Success more specifically, UE Success under this agreement isn't about achieving university entrance as it currently stands. So if you go onto the NZQA website and you write university entrance, what it will tell you is a minimum of requirements that you have to get university entrance. And the language choice in that is in part of the problem. So what we've done over many years is there's the issue of low education around UE versus level 3. But compounded with that, we've got students who have been taught, if I just get this, then I've got UE. And what we're seeing in our data as a university is that university entrance, if we think about it as a fit for purpose qualification, it's not the minimum. So the minimum talks about 3 approved subjects. So that's another education piece that lots of people don't know about. You need to do subjects that are university approved. But beyond that, you can get those credits under the current UE system with internal credits. And what we're seeing as a university is if you come in with external credits, for example, more than 20 external credits, you're 95% likely to experience success in your first year. And that part is really important. But beyond UE, we're starting to think about how do we support our students, not only to get UE, not only to come into the university, but if we rethink what UE means, how to thrive and succeed at the university.
You talk a lot about the lack of preparedness for university when it comes to our Māori and Pacific students. But within this initiative, is there room to also address why high school students are needing to work part-time or full-time jobs to support their families? That will be a barrier to gaining university entrance, wouldn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And there's no silver bullet, and I should add, lack of preparedness is certainly not due to the learner. When we talk about lack of preparedness, we're really talking about inequities that play out in how we're supporting learners and their families to make informed decisions, which starts really early. So inequity is actually the foundation of that lack of preparedness that we talk about. But it is really complex, and we're aware in our partner schools where we've had conversations around that complexity and the demands of work. And just to speak around work, one of the things we found is we've been delivering Pacific Academy, which is a math and science tutoring program aimed at supporting students to succeed in external exams. And one of the things we found is students are coming through word of mouth, and one of the students said, a mate of mine told me about this at work. So we know that you can do both of those things. You can work and you can thrive academically with the right support, and with a real collective approach that's not the onus on the learner, that's not the onus on the family. It's far broader than that in terms of the school environment, the teacher capability and development, and the education piece across the community.
Speaking of support, once these students come into uni, how will you ensure that there's retention, that they will stay and they will complete their course?
Yeah, so if I can go back to some of our data around preparedness, what we're seeing, so you know the difference between exams and then internal credits. So if students sit exams, and I'll just pull up some of our Pacific our data. So if a Pacific student gets more than 20 exam credits in their year 13 year, they're at an 81% success rate, retention rate during their first year. So there's a lot of work we can do even before they enter the university, which is what this agreement's about, to make sure that we have that retention. And if we inverse that, worryingly, if you don't come in, if a Pacific learner doesn't come in with any external credit, their first year fail rate is 45%. So that's almost 50%. They may still get UA, but if they don't have those external credits, they haven't engaged in the type of learning that's mirrored across the university. Across all universities, there's an external component. So again, if I think back to the agreement, preparedness is one of those. And then once a student does join the university, there's our tuakana, our supports, as well as our learning and teaching supports in the libraries. And we've got a suite of faculty-specific supports to make sure, one, that they're culturally relevant, and two, that they're accessible, whatever space that the student feels most comfortable in.
Well, we're just about to wrap up our talanoa, but what message do you have for our Māori and Pasifika parents and students who are wanting to enter uni but are unsure about what it takes to get there?
My first one is you absolutely have what it takes. We know this. Let's start the conversation much, much earlier. At year 9 and year 10, if you've got questions, you're most welcome to come into the university, see a university staff member at school, come through to one of our programs so that we can start pathwaying and subject planning much earlier.
That's Pacific Waves for today. To listen back, head over to rnzi.com/programs. We're also on Spotify, Apple and iHeartRadio. From myself and the RNZ Pacific team, Tōwhā Soifua.